Hi, and welcome to the Finally Pregnant podcast, the podcast for people who are finally pregnant after infertility and loss. I'm your host, Kat Strawbridge, and after almost 7 years trying with multiple rounds of fertility treatment, which sadly included pregnancy loss, last year I was finally pregnant, and now I'm finally parenting my gorgeous daughter, Ren. Hello there, how are you doing? Welcome to this week's episode of the Finally Pregnant podcast. I hope you had a lovely Easter and managed to even see some friends and family, perhaps for the first time in a long time. I'm recording this just before the Easter weekend and I'm looking forward to seeing some of our family. But I have to be honest, I'm also a little bit apprehensive about seeing so many people, you know, each day. We're breaking it down, but it feels like a lot of people on consecutive days. It's kind of strange. Is that weird? I don't know. I'm sure it'll be lovely. Well, I know it'll be lovely, but it just feels very different right now. But anyway, I'm also a little bit nervous about having so much chocolate in the house because I eat whatever rubbish and sugary stuff there is in the house. And at this stage, Ren doesn't like chocolate, and I haven't pre-warned any of my family about that. So I know they're going to turn up with chocolate eggs and I'm going to eat them all. And I know that there are bigger problems, but right now I just don't need the chocolate. But anyway, it actually reminds me, I don't know if you saw on Insta, but I won a 10-week body transformation. I'm actually really nervous. However, it's exactly what I need because I plateaued with my weight after having Ren. I totally plateaued about 18 months after she was born. So I had stopped breastfeeding and yeah, I'm just not shifting it. And I would really like to. I would really like to feel fit and healthy and strong and slimmer. So yeah, I'm doing this. Anyway, we'll see how that goes. I might just eat all the chocolate and it doesn't start until the 19th of April. So, you know, anyway, we'll see. The point is, it's going to get me back into exercising. And that has got to be a good thing, hasn't it? Because exercise and getting our bodies moving at all stages is just so important. And that is also the case if you are pregnant, which is why the yoga sessions has become such an important part of what I do. Not only does it give you that movement, but also the community and the support. And in fact, next week's episode of the podcast, I'm going to be chatting to the lovely Sim and Amelie, who are the yoga teachers that take the classes for me. So make sure you tune in for that. Whether or not you're pregnant right now, they're just such lovely ladies. So please do come and meet them if you would next week, because yeah, they're just... they're lovely. Anyway, if you are subscribed to the podcast, you'll actually receive a notification about that episode and all of the episodes. So please head to wherever you listen to your podcast and subscribe. And while you're there, please do rate and review the podcast. Here's a little review that I thought I would read you. It doesn't need to be long, just something little. But one of you lovely ladies wrote this. Kat is like a friend who has been through so many things that I have too. I found her podcast so helpful and reassuring, so I felt less alone through our journey to finally becoming parents through IVF, loss, and failed cycles. It means that more people will find out about the podcast. It really does help my reach. So please, please, if you have a moment, head over and leave a review. Thank you so much. On to today's episode, where I am chatting to the lovely Sophie, founder of Mama Made. Mama Made deliver organic, frozen, homemade quality meals created by expert nutritionists and chefs straight to your door. A little reminder that Hangout members receive a 20% discount on their first 3 Mama Made boxes. You can find out more about the Hangout, which is my community for those who are finally pregnant and parenting, at katstrawbridge.com. But all the links to Instagram, to my website, to Mama Made, to everything will be in the show notes. So head there too. Back to Sophie and today's episode. Mum of two, Sophie had had her son Arthur just 8 weeks before we sat down for this chat. And during our conversation, she talks about her experience of being pregnant after loss, how that impacted her, especially going through lockdown. And we also talk about going over the 40-week gestation, which I found fascinating, actually. So, yeah. I really hope that you enjoy our chat and I hope to see you again next week. Take care. Bye-bye. Before we start, time for a quick ad break. Knowing your fertile days are so important if you are trying to get pregnant or trying to avoid it. With the Mirror Fertility Tracker, you will know your fertile window up to 6 days. It is the only tracker on the market that provides you an accurate and personalized ovulation analysis by tracking your LH and estrogen hormone levels. Find out more at mirrorcare.com. There's a link in the show notes and get £25 off your tracker with the code FINALLYPREGNANT. Hi there, Sophie. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm doing really well, thank you. How are you?
I'm really well, thank you very much. It's a pleasure for you to join us today. Some people will know you from your amazing brand, Mama Made, and we can talk about that a little bit later as well. But during conversations with your team, I found out that you had actually experienced loss quite recently, but have subsequently had a son, Arthur, which is amazing, your second child. And so we got talking, and it would be really incredible for you to share your story with my listeners today. But yeah, just tell us, I guess, to start with, a little bit about yourself, if you would.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. We spoke about this before, but after I experienced that loss, getting sort of positive stories was something that really kind of kept me going. So yeah, I really appreciate what you're doing with this podcast. So yeah, I'm a New Yorker in London. I've been here about 7 years or so. And I founded a company called Mama Made shortly after the birth of my daughter, Liba, almost 4 years ago now. And really just as a way to support parents throughout the weaning journey, trying to be that support system that I felt personally was lacking. And especially in modern parenthood, just not really having a brand that was speaking to me. I set that up when she was about a year, really only got going last January, and it's been amazing to see the kind of community. And as a result, I have been quite open about my experience with loss. It's something that obviously my team knows about now. I'm just very happy to be speaking with you today.
Oh, honestly, it's just, yeah, it's an absolute pleasure. So you have got a daughter, Liba, who's about 3 and a half now. Is that right?
That's right. Yeah.
And she was conceived naturally and you hadn't experienced loss at that point. How was that pregnancy for you?
So I was actually really anxious during that pregnancy. So loss and baby loss and miscarriage wasn't something that was sort of foreign to me. I knew my mother had struggled with it, my sister as well. So I was a bit on edge really throughout the pregnancy. I also have PCOS, which is a condition that can increase the likelihood of miscarriage. So I was, yeah, very much kind of on edge throughout that pregnancy and didn't actually believe I would end up with a baby. So I look back on my pregnancy with Liba and just, yeah, it was a very negative time, actually. I really struggled with the anxiety around it. I ended up being referred to the perinatal mental health clinic, which was really helpful, actually, because I was really struggling. But then she was here, and that really was a huge relief, I think, once she was born. I would say it took a while for me to think again about having another. It sounds silly because they're only 3.5 years apart now, my two. But I had so many friends who were having babies like exactly 24 months apart or like 20 months apart. And I just remember thinking, like, how are people ready for another? Like the kind of mental health toll that pregnancy had taken. It took me a good 2 years to kind of work through to be ready for another.
And that's really interesting because I often, you know, like the topic of this podcast is about being finally pregnant or parenting after infertility and loss. But you and sometimes I refer to kind of normal pregnancies, quote unquote, as you know, people who haven't been through that to be pregnant. And I often say, you know, I can't speak to that, but I'm sure that there are anxieties in those instances as well. And for you, particularly because of what's gone, you know, on with your mum, like you said, and your sister, and with your PCOS, that is something like, actually, that was an anxious pregnancy for you anyway. I'm really sorry to hear that, because I guess you kind of hope that people who haven't been through infertility or loss actually get that joyous pregnancy, but that isn't always the case, is it?
No, I guess no, it's not. And the more I speak to people, I think really no matter how you conceived your pregnancy, there's always something to be a bit anxious about in pregnancy. I do appreciate that it's a much different kind of anxiety when you actually have experienced loss, and you kind of know what that feels like. But I think I guess the way that I was exposed to pregnancies throughout my life, I never assumed that a pregnancy leads to a live birth. And so that definitely did inform how I experienced pregnancy, even the first time around.
Yeah, absolutely. Thank you for sharing that with us. And so you mentioned your mental health, and it took you a couple of years, completely understandably, to kind of feel strong enough to think about conceiving again. And then you made the decision, I guess, to try, and you got pregnant again, didn't you?
Yeah, I did. And actually, funny enough, that was such a positive pregnancy, for, you know, the length that it lasted. I really felt really good in myself, really positive. I had gotten sort of more exposed to the world of like hypnobirthing and positive affirmations. And, you know, I kept saying, you know, why not have two pregnancies, two births? Like, that was something that I kept saying, like, plenty of people have two pregnancies and two births. And I remember feeling really good. I had a lot of energy, really positive. I was still a bit anxious, so I was getting scans throughout the first trimester, privately. And, you know, everything looked good and was fine. And I just felt like, okay, I can settle into this pregnancy. Everything's going to be good. So yeah, referring to that kind of pregnancy that you were saying must be the case for people who just conceive and that's it. Yeah, unfortunately that one did not end in a live birth, but yeah, it was sort of nice to have experience for the time that I did, the kind of feeling really good in pregnancy.
It's good to hear you say that. And it's something that I encourage people to do, to try and enjoy their pregnancies as much as possible. I understand that the anxiety is never going to go away 24/7. You know, that I think that is... we'll just constantly be feeling like we're letting ourselves down if we think that is possible. Because I don't know, hopefully it is possible for some people, but I don't know that it is in my experience anyway. But what I talk about is stealing back, you know, the good bits, and stealing back some of that time from the anxiety and enjoying as much as possible. And I remember, talking about an experience. So my pregnancy was twins to start with, but we lost one of the twins. But I will always remember announcing to my family that it was twins, because we'd kept it a secret for a couple of weeks. And it was one of my other sister's baby showers at the end of the baby shower, just before my family kind of dispersed, pre-COVID clearly. I got them together, my sisters and my mum, and showed them the video of the scan with the two babies. And I will always remember that and cherish that. So like you talk about, like you enjoyed that pregnancy as long as it lasted. And I enjoyed that moment and that time, even though things changed afterwards, you know, and fortunately, like I did have a live birth at the end of that. But in your case, you know, you did lose that baby. And that was a fairly traumatic, you know, it was kind of, you talked to me before about it being like an A&E journey and ambulance journey, rather, should I say. And so that was quite a traumatic loss for you.
Yeah, I definitely found it physically traumatic in a way, more than mentally. I think because I understood loss as a kind of function of pregnancy already. And in a way, it was something I was anticipating, not to say I wasn't just horrified by the fact that I was losing that pregnancy, but there was a very sort of physical reality to it that I hadn't anticipated, that I felt so physically weak after it, that that kind of in a way took more time to process than the loss itself. Yeah, without going into detail, just sort of like really bearing witness to what that means to lose a baby, and just feeling like it was one of the most horrific things I'd ever experienced. And yeah, there was a real physical trauma to it. So I guess I look back on that experience, though, and now that I have Arthur, and I just think that, I mean, without getting a bit too hooey around here, but I do believe it was probably the same soul that I've given birth to now. It just wasn't the right time then. But yeah, it was quite a physically kind of traumatic experience, I would say, that as much as you can know about miscarriage, you don't really know what that is like until you go through it.
And I think each one is different, you know, like I have been there more than once and each one is different. And also people often say to me, you know, that I didn't know what to expect, you know, and it's like, why would you look into miscarriage before you're going through it? And that does leave us kind of in an unknown space. But like I said, everyone is different, even for the same person, each one, it might be different. So we feel unprepared, but that's kind of good in a way, even though obviously going into any situation unprepared means that it is all quite kind of shocking and eye-opening and traumatic. And, you know, so it's a really difficult, it's just difficult all round, isn't it? Let's face it. Like, it's just a heartbreaking situation to be in. You talked about your physical recovery being quite difficult, and no doubt an emotional recovery, you know, is going to be difficult. How soon afterwards did you feel in a position that you were ready to try again?
I guess when I tell the timeline now, like a year plus on, it seems like it was really quick, but I really, because I don't know, you go onto online message boards, and I was busy, you know, on these different Instagram communities, and you always, and even speaking to friends who had experienced miscarriage, and the kind of overwhelming message that I was receiving was like, I just wanted to get pregnant again. Like, I just wanted to try as soon as I could. And my sister, who had experienced loss, kept saying, you don't have to wait for your period to come. Just get, you know, you can just try. And yeah, I just couldn't face it. I really couldn't face it. It was, but then, you know, you say, okay, it was 3 months that I needed, and 3 months sounds like nothing now in hindsight. At the time, it felt like, oh, why am I not ready yet? Why is this taking so long for me to feel ready again? So yeah, hindsight's a funny thing. At the time, it felt like it was taking ages to get over, but actually I miscarried in over Christmas, and I found out I was pregnant early April. So it really wasn't very long at all. But yeah, it felt like ages, I guess, at the time.
Yeah, absolutely. No, and it's right. And like, well, the doctors often say 3 months, don't they? And, oh, that's things I've heard in the past. But, you know, what's right for you? And I know, and lots of people will know, you know, that each one of those months, like, they tick by, don't they? And they feel like ages until you could potentially try again. And, you know, so it does, when you're in it, it goes on a long, long time. But as you say, hindsight, you know, it's still 4 months. So, you know, so you did get pregnant again. And how was that pregnancy?
So that pregnancy coincided right with that onset of the first lockdown. So there was an anxiety in the air already. You know, initially when coronavirus was kind of coming to the UK and all these lockdown measures were being announced, and there was an initial feeling of actually relief that I wasn't going to be having a baby, because it would have coincided with around that period, and feeling like, oh wow, like I won't have a pandemic baby. Like, I was actually, there was a reason behind having that, had that loss, but something that I really experienced and believed. And there was a bit of like umming and ahhing, and should we wait until the pandemic's over? And ultimately deciding that no, we did want, you know, our daughter to have a sibling, and we wanted to kind of move on with our lives. So when I did find out I was pregnant, though, there was that, of course, that immediate like, oh no, this again. So I wouldn't say I was happy about it at all. And I was quite anxious, because normally I think I would have gotten, I mean, I know I did in my other two pregnancies, like loads of private scans, if not through the NHS. And at the time, just nothing was open. Absolutely nothing was open. And I actually began to experience the same sensation. I mean, the mind is like a crazy thing, but I really did feel at certain points like I was definitely miscarrying. Like, I felt the pain. I felt like I was, you know, I did have some bleeding, which is normal, but I just, and then like things that I think normally might have just been brushed off as routine, I just completely like panicked about. So I did end up getting several referrals to the early pregnancy unit from my GP, because I was so panicked, really. And it was a funny thing where then you realize like, oh wait, I've gotten this scan, but this isn't reassuring at all, because obviously my last pregnancy, you can have scans and then lose a baby. So there was a real kind of period in that first trimester, especially, and even beyond, of that coincided with the pandemic, of just learning to kind of sit with the uncertainty, just realizing that I had no choice. Like, I was never going to know how this pregnancy was going to end up. And same way we didn't know when the pandemic was going to end. And, you know, would my family see me pregnant? Because my family's in the States. Like, would they meet this baby? You know, all these sort of uncertainty questions really did cause a lot of anxiety, but I had to learn to just sit with that. And so that was a real growth experience for me, I think, to learn to sit with the real discomfort of all of those kind of worries.
That's a lot to go through. It really is. And I know that lots of people within my hangout and that I chat to kind of within my DMs and things, like, lockdown was just such a hard time. And especially, you know, it was a hard time if you were parenting, it's a hard time if you're pregnant. It was really difficult. And, you know, kind of kudos to you for being able to, like, learn to sit with that. I guess in some ways one didn't have a choice, but, yeah, you know, like, you know, you could have sat there in a ball of nerves. Otherwise there would have been the alternative. So like, it sounds like you did an amazing job. And I guess in some ways, and, you know, we've been talking a lot, particularly because of my own experience, I guess, about secondary infertility, but how was dealing with that anxiety whilst parenting Liba as well?
Yeah. So I was going to say, actually, in a way, I felt very grateful that I had her, because she was at the time she was what, 2.5. And, you know, she needed a lot of attention and a lot of entertaining and a lot of playing. And so I sort of had no choice but to kind of, you know, you have to wake up each day and you have to kind of keep busy and have structure to the day, which is something that, yeah, I wouldn't have had, you know, with when I was pregnant with Liba. I think I struggled actually from that lack of kind of structure in some ways. So having to get up and keep busy, and Mama Maid at the time was just exploding. It was such a busy time for us as a company. And so I'm also very grateful that kind of, I had so many distractions, really. And I think also having experienced the loss in the way that I did, I was a bit detached from the pregnancy as well. I was just sort of like, you know, I know that this, you know, there's X percent chance. I kind of kept saying like, oh, you know, it's the same percentage chance that I'll lose this baby as it was the last baby. You know, the odds don't change just because it's another pregnancy. And in a way, I found that reassuring. It was worrying, but also I just felt like I got through the last one. I felt very detached from the whole thing and kind of kept reducing it down to numbers. And I don't think I ever really connected with the pregnancy in that sense. Not until probably the third trimester, whenever I started to really feel like there was, you know, viability, it should the baby be born. So yeah, there were a lot of distractions, which was good.
That is good, definitely. And I think lots of people would agree with you, like, once you get to viability, that's, you know, when you start believing that actually this is going to happen, because you're lost. How many weeks were you when you lost?
So it was about 12 weeks.
12 weeks. And but still, you know, you see, so your whole second trimester, you were still nervous. And but, it, you know, once you got into that viability, that's when you kind of started to connect. Did you find out what you were having?
We did. I just felt like I needed to knock off one element of uncertainty. I regret not knowing what gender, you know, of the baby that I lost in the last pregnancy. I just wanted to know what it was. And yeah, that did help as well, just to think about kind of having a boy and what that would be like. But I still don't think I really got excited about the pregnancy. It was still this kind of measured, like, yeah, we'll see what actually happens. We'll see what actually comes out. I bought almost nothing. Yeah, I prepared almost nothing for the baby until the very, very end.
Yeah. And that's so sad. Like, when I hear that, and like I say, it's something that I hear a lot, that it does kind of take that away, doesn't it? Having experienced the loss. But the amazing news is that Arthur arrived only a few weeks ago. How was the birth and everything?
So funny, because actually, you know, I spent the whole pregnancy just wanting him out. I just wanted him to be here and be safe and know that everything was fine. And then towards the end of the pregnancy, I actually started to get more like, I want a bit more choosy, I think, about the birth that I wanted to have. I'd had a really sort of straightforward birth with Liba, and I had been offered induction. I'd been offered, you know, to have the baby earlier, and I got just very kind of, yeah, a bit more in the kind of natural birth space of like wanting, you know, the baby will come when the baby's ready. I actually wanted to have a home birth and just be at home and be calm. And that's where I felt like I would feel the safest. In the end, Arthur had no interest in coming out, and he was about 2 weeks overdue. And that was like a terrible, not terrible, but it was a funny time where like I was so desperate for him to come out and know that he was fine. At the same time, like terrified of a birth with intervention, just because I think wrongfully informed that that might actually introduce more risks to the baby, and feeling like he would be safer being born at home. And so I really resisted induction. I was really encouraged to have induction because he was quite big. I was measuring very big, but yeah, in the end I was induced for dates at just under 42 weeks. And it was like the exact opposite birth of what I had wanted with him. It was like the most medicalized, you know, legs and stirrups kind of birth. But the relief once he was born, like, is, I didn't experience that with Liba for sure. It was like such a release. And I still look at him every day. I'm just like, wow, I can't believe you're here, in a way that I feel bad. I didn't feel that with Liba in a way. I took her not for granted, but it didn't feel as special, the birth.
I think I can understand that. They're all precious, but once you've been through something like you have, you know, it does kind of, it just reiterates like what a miracle life is, doesn't it? And so, and I'm sure you probably look at Liba slightly differently now as well because of it. Going back to your birth, if I can just ask you about that, because I was induced at 39 weeks and I was it's terrible, isn't it? I was 40 when I had Ren. And so I wasn't allowed, you know, to go into the birthing suite, or that's what they said. And I didn't question it. I just was like, whatever needs to be done to get this baby out safely, you know, I'm there. And there is a bit of me that would have loved to have gone over, you know, and see what happened naturally, you know, like when she chose to come out, kind of thing. But I, some might say, didn't have the balls to do it. I don't know. Like, I just thought, nope, I just want to do whatever they tell me. I just, you know, I couldn't take the responsibility of something going wrong, perhaps. I really admire that you kind of stuck to your guns and you wanted to wait and see, like, what was, especially those last 2 weeks, like, how were you feeling in that time?
I mean, I look back and I just think, I should have just gotten the induction at 39 weeks. But no, I think there was a real, that was probably the most kind of bonding experience that I had with Bump, with the baby, I guess. I never actually expected I'd go over with Liba. I went naturally at 39 weeks. So I just assumed, you know, everyone says second babies are faster and earlier and easier and everything. not the case with Arthur. You know, there's an element of like trying to surrender to your body, and then just, again, that kind of self-care element that I really got into, like knowing kind of the science of how your body goes into labor with like oxytocin and trying to up those feel-good hormones. And it was a real kind of indulgent few weeks, which in hindsight, I am glad I had, because it was, you know, lots of baths and essential oils and just laying and watching Netflix and just being, yeah, very indulgent in a way that I never am, especially with like how busy our lives are. But I think also when you've experienced loss, or even if you just have an anxious pregnancy, you do just want to know that there's, that you're doing everything you can to have a healthy baby. And so I actually feel, my sister, who's an obstetrician, is the one who was really encouraging me to, you know, just go to get your induction. Like, why are you dragging this out? And during my birth, I actually experienced something called shoulder dystocia, which is when the baby's head is born, but then the shoulder gets stuck behind the pubic bone. And it's a real emergency. It happens in like less than 1% of births, and it can end very, very, very badly. And thankfully he was fine and I was fine, but I'm still sort of processing this feeling of guilt of like, you know, I was very self-indulgent the last few weeks for wanting the birth I wanted, when really all that matters is getting a baby out safely and healthy and you know, if he'd been born 3 weeks early, he would not have been a whopping 10 pounds. And it would have been a much different birth and not as much of an emergency. So there's that. I think there's a lot of trust to put into the medical establishment. I think that I was a bit blinded in some ways by the kind of natural birth movement, I think, and grappling with the kind of two extremes of wanting that kind of positive birth experience in quotation marks, and then wanting a healthy baby at the end of it. So yeah, he's 8 weeks. I'm still processing it all. But yeah, it was a mix of, it was quite self-indulgent at the end, I would say.
But it's so hard again, isn't it? You know, like I understand why you have those feelings around it. And I definitely, you know, would encourage anyone who has been through any kind of trauma to work on processing that and, you know, speak to professionals and really make sure that you can kind of resolve that as much as possible internally. But I also, you know, I totally understand it, you know, because again, we don't, it's different for everyone and every birth is different, like for each individual, and we don't know. And hindsight, you know, as you mentioned earlier on, is a wonderful thing. It really is. But at the time, I think we make decisions that are right for us there and then, don't we? And it's so difficult. Like our human brains are just so, we beat ourselves up, don't we? So much. But we must make the right decisions for ourselves at the time with as much research and understanding and, you know, all of that and support as possible. But it is right for us. And that decision was right for you. And you had that wonderful time. And fortunately, Arthur is here safely. So that's wonderful. And, you know, 8 weeks old. So like you say, you're still processing a lot. But how is it? How is it having two as well?
No, it's been such a joy, honestly. I'd never felt this way. Certainly not after having Liba, that, you know, just genuinely just enjoying my baby, and kind of ignoring, with Liba I was so anxious, you know, about getting her to sleep the night and getting her to eat properly and just getting her to be like that kind of picture perfect baby and making sure I was doing, yeah, just worried, am I doing things right? And with him it's much easier, probably because he's my second, but also because of probably what I went through with his birth and then even just having him this side. I'm just enjoying him. I'm definitely spoiling him rotten. I think my partner has him at the moment while we're speaking, and it's like no one ever has him other than me. So this is like a bit different. So I'm doing like everything opposite to what I did with Liba, you know, in terms of really like not letting him go. But it's a lot easier in a way being locked down at the moment, you know, not having that pressure to have people over, not having the pressure to go out and do anything, and really just being able to indulge in this baby has been a real gift. It's been really, really nice, I have to say.
Yeah, and I can understand that. Ren was 9 months old when we went into lockdown the first time, and there really was that slowed pace, like, and the benefits from that. And now obviously, you know, like there's good, bad and ugly in this situation, and I suppose at this point, because we had an announcement in the UK just a couple of days ago with how we're hopefully going to emerge out of lockdown life and back to normal life, whatever that looks like. So the pressure is off ever so slightly, that being a long-term thing. So I guess it's almost kind of try and enjoy as much of that now as possible, because life is fortunately going to change over the next few months, which is exciting. And can I ask you, for those who run their own businesses and just, you know, like as far as maternity leave, and because, you know, Mama Maid is your company, and how are you dealing with working and maternity leave? Are you, have you walked away from it as much as possible? I know you're doing this podcast, thank you. but how's that working?
It's funny, I said I was going to take 2 weeks maternity leave because I was like, oh, you know, newborns will be easy compared to toddlers and preschoolers. And yeah, I forgot kind of what the recovery is like after having a baby. And it's definitely much harder this time. Just thinking about what a year it's been with my body, what it's gone through. So it's been a lot slower. The 3 weeks that I had before Arthur came were pure maternity leave. I was literally like not even checking emails. I was not speaking to the team. I just wasn't like not engaged at all with work. I'm very grateful that my partner in life is also my partner in business, and he really took on a huge amount because I think that end bit of pregnancy can be such an anxious time. Since Arthur's born, I've been kind of dabbling in and out. I think that's also part of the luxury of being locked down in a way, is that I can, you know, I can in a way do it all because everything's online. But very gently easing into it. So I'm so happy to speak to you today and to have calls and phone calls like these and to start speaking more and more to people, speaking more to the team who've have been working just around the clock. We did a rebrand and we launched a new website. Literally, Ian was like on his computer while I was in labor. So it's been a very, very crazy few months. And yeah, I think I'm now at 8 weeks, have really turned a corner, and I'm actually really happy to be able to kind of do both. So going for those long kind of maternity leave walks, but also using my brain in a way that I've missed. So far, so good. We'll see. Once Arthur gets a bit bigger, we're going to need to sort out some kind of childcare. But for now, we're just, yeah, again, being in the moment and just making the most of it.
Wonderful. Wonderful. Thank you so much, Sophie. I really, really appreciate you taking the time out. I bet you're desperate to get back to him.
No, honestly, it's such a pleasure to speak to you. And again, to like use my brain and to speak to another adult is like also really nice. Speaking to someone who's not Ian and not a baby. It's been a pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. And I know that this, like, as a story of hope, you know, after what you've been through, will help so many. So thank you, and take care.
Yeah, thanks again.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.